York to Waynesburg, Bedford to Danville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the 2015-2016 session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly is now in the history books. And once again, lawmakers have failed to come to grips with the state's growing public pension crisis. David Taylor and Matt Briette are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. And it is a little-known provision of the tax code, but so-called carried interest is critical to creating the capital needed to finance business expansion and job creation. I'll explain what it is and how it works on my Town Hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania economy is plodding along as jobs numbers have continued to weaken since March. According to the Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh, recently released labor data for September put the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate in the state at 5.7%. Now, that's up almost a full percentage point since last March. The Allegheny Institute's analysis points out it is virtually axiomatic that slowing jobs gains will translate into weaker revenue for taxing bodies. That is especially bad news for the state budget, which already is experiencing a projected revenue shortfall from taxation that has failed to materialize. Worse, falling employment rates deprive the state of personal income tax revenue and ultimately lead to a drop in sales tax collections as people have less money to spend. The data shows personal income tax collections already trailing last year's collections by 2.4%. As we reach the end of the 2016 election cycle, an analysis of public sector labor union spending on political campaigns by the Commonwealth Foundation shows that government employee unions have poured nearly $8 million into Pennsylvania races. The biggest beneficiary of the union's largesse, Katie McGinty, who banked nearly $4.5 million in union contributions for her campaign against incumbent U.S. Senator Pat Toomey. McGinty, you may recall, served as chief of staff to Governor Tom Wolf before resigning to run for the Senate. In that role, she pushed for major spending increases and the tax hikes needed to pay for them. Now that it is November, those forced to turn to the federal government for health care coverage will experience sticker shock. According to statistics released by the ACASignups.net, a tracker of ACA enrollment, unsubsidized health care premiums in Obamacare are expected to rise nationally by an average of 25% for 2017. In addition to premium increases, Americans who selected health care coverage through the ACA exchanges will also see significant increases in their deductibles. On top of that, the number of insurance plans available are headed in the opposite direction. Aetna and United Healthcare, as well as many smaller insurers, have pulled out of the exchanges, citing financial losses. Read about these stories and more at patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania General Assembly has wrapped up work for this session. Several major items of business were left unfinished, including a failed last-minute push for some modest reforms to the state's massively underfunded public pension system. Here for a Capitol Watch look at what did and did not happen are Dave Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Matt Briette of Commonwealth Partners. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, president of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Matt Briette, president and CEO of Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being with me.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
So, Matt, I want to grapple with something. And I, you know, and again, this is a spoiler alert to the listeners that if they haven't picked up on it by now, you know, we're conservatives. You know, we believe, I know, shocker. You know, we believe in limited government. We believe in the constraints of the Constitution. We believe that it, in fact, should be difficult for government to do things. You know, that to have a new idea or a change in policy, it needs to, you know, to go through all those different checks and balances.
And the reason for that is that we believe that that's what allows for the greatest level of human flourishing, that when people are empowered to make decisions for their own lives, and government just is the referee.
Yes.
For when individuals behave improperly, not
yes.
to actually be players on the field and
yes.
edging us out from pursuing our own happiness.
Exactly. To maximize freedom, to maximize human potential, we want to make sure that mm-hmm. power is constrained. All those caveats out there, those things being said, we still need our federal government and our state government to do the things that they're supposed to do, the reasons why they, you know, governments are constituted mm-hmm. among men, meaning people. But in Harrisburg, you know, I mean, Matt, you and I have a ringside seat at the circus, and that, you know, to see a major policy challenge like the unfunded liability on our publicly funded our public employee pension systems, the two of them, one for state employees, one for public school employees. The amount of debt is ruinous, that we're talking about a problem that gets worse by $10 million a day climbing, that the government math says that it's maybe $60 billion. Private sector accounting would indicate that it's double that. So this is going to bankrupt us. I mean, this is a live fire exercise. This is no fooling around. It's hard to imagine a crisis worse yeah. than this one.
Well, in 2006, so 10 years ago, when the Commonwealth Foundation began raising the alarm about the growing unfunded liability, because, of course, long before that, the private sector had said, look, these are unaffordable, they're unsustainable. They moved to defined contribution plans. Well, the state's two largest pension systems for state workers and public school teachers had an unfunded liability in 2006 of about $7 billion. Now, according to government math, that's today about $63 billion. But you're correct, David. If we actually did the way the private sector calculates things, we're looking at probably doubling that easily. And that's just the two largest pension plans in our state. You add in the municipal level pensions.
Right, right.
I mean, we are talking about massive debt that it's what Rick Dreyfuss, the actuary at Commonwealth Foundation, calls generational theft
mm-hmm.
because we are stealing from future generations their ability to pay for schools or roads or other what we would say are functions of government. And it's going that money is going to be eaten up because of promises that we've made that we simply cannot keep. Well, and in fact, you could say and argue that Governor Tom Corbett, so nearly 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Began pushing for some action. Yet we haven't seen anything pass a gubernatorial veto pen. Of course, Governor Wolf vetoed a very aggressive reform bill in June of 2015, something that would have been dramatic for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and putting us on that right track of truly addressing it. But here we are. We're lamenting this because just the latest effort came up just a handful of votes, I think three votes in the House, short of beginning that process of reforming the pension system to start to look like something in the private sector.
Right, right. And so this is what I'm pointing to here, Matt, that we have a crisis this severe that it threatens to starve out the state budget from anything other than just pension payments and then debt on the money that we owe. We can't even marshal enough political willpower and consensus to take like the baby aspirin version of the first stage of reform. And so just from the perspective of, you know, a Pennsylvanian, any kind of taxpayer, but certainly a concerned citizen, like, what do we do? How do we make state government do the things that it's supposed to do, while trying to keep it from not doing the things that it's not supposed to do?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand why this problem is not addressed adequately and why we're not seeing the kinds of reforms here in 2016 that were done 20 years ago or 30 years ago in the private sector. And a lot of it, David, is it's surrounded by the culture of Harrisburg, the bubble into which many people go to work every day, what they know as staffers in terms of their retirement plans, what they pay towards health care. It is a bubble, David, that you know doesn't exist outside of government. Government has insulated the folks making those decisions, from legislators to staffers, from the reality that is happening all across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And it is that bubble that has been difficult to penetrate, that is guarded particularly by the government employee unions that refuse to come to the table for any negotiations over any changes as it relates to pension. So you've got political pressures because those special interests that profit from these pension systems bring tons of cash to elections. The politicians that are tasked with reforming things know that very well. They're experiencing it in this election season and have experienced it. These dynamics, David, are why I believe we cannot get the kind of reform that most people outside of government pull their hair out, poke their eyes out, thinking, why? Why can you not get this done when the math? And it's math. This is a math problem, David.
Yeah, it's not ideological. It's not left or right, business, labor, conservative,
that's
liberal.
Right.
This is math.
It is just straight up math. Yet that math challenge is somehow not grabbing people by the napes of the neck and saying, go in there and don't come out until you solve this problem.
The bureaucrat unions, they have inordinate power, that they have the power to compel people to pay them money as a condition of holding their jobs, mm-hmm. working in the public sector. And so in that way, there's no accountability to members. Members can't voluntarily leave. Even if you try to leave, you still owe them – you have to pay them because they supposedly represent you. And so without having to satisfy members, without having to go to members and have them voluntarily, you know, sign over a check, that it makes the union leadership less accountable and more reactionary, more, you know, absolutist, to the point now where the perspective of these bureaucrat unions, their attitude is that so long as there are taxpayers, we'll just bleed them.
Well, most of the unions that have control over various workplaces, whether it's a school district or a state local government, were voted in decades ago and have never had to stand for re-election. And so they maintain that monopoly control over the employees in a school district and other public employment places, and as you said, are able to compel hundreds of dollars out of people's paychecks that they then turn around and deploy for political means. And this is the irony, David. You've heard Hillary Clinton talk about Citizens United and saying that this was big, a big business benefit to play in politics. But really, it's been the unions who are now deploying dues money for just direct political purposes. And that's why we're seeing even more money flowing into politics used by unions that, well, is supposedly and technically only supposed to be used for collective bargaining purposes. But the unions have been able to redeploy that money to defend the indefensible, to maintain pension systems that we're dealing with right now that, as you've noted, David, are going to threaten our fiscal well-being in Pennsylvania to where, boy, any new money's coming in is going right out to pay for retirement benefits.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. You have these bureaucrat unions acting like they own our government, acting like they own these agencies and departments and county courthouses and school buildings, where, hypothetically, that these public employees are supposed to be working for the public, that we are the employer, the citizen, the taxpayer, but there's no accountability. There's no accountability because, again, as was said, that these unions can compel people to pay them money as a condition of having a job. The workers are held captive. That nobody has had an election certifying the union within the careers, the working lives of the people who are in those institutions. And then that those bureaucrat unions plow money, huge amounts of money, into politics in support of those politicians who will expand and enrich government, raise taxes, have government consume a larger portion of the private economy, which leads to, more hiring of public employees, which means more money for the union, more power, more control, more dollars to plow back into campaigns, and on it goes.
Well, David, you said, they act like they own the legislature or the process. Well, that is because in effect they do. Look, this last effort to get even a semblance of a defined contribution plan into place, you had zero Democratic votes in either the House or the Senate, and you had enough Republicans in the House, over almost two dozen of them, that were not willing to go against the union either. So if you told me to prove that they don't own it, I would have a very difficult time because – as we've said, this is a math problem that nobody can deny. Yet those special interests hold a lot of people by the short hairs, and that has stymied the reforms that we desperately need.
Well, and there's another example of this reactionary mentality that the SEPTA unions went on strike.
That's the mass transit in Philly.
Yes, the Southeast Pennsylvania Transportation Agency, SEPTA, that the employees went on strike. And, again, to leverage, that they're a public entity receiving large amounts of state taxpayer dollars. The system doesn't just abide by, fair dollars.
Yes.
There's a lot of public money that gets plowed into this. It is a public need. That's not in dispute that in the dense urban areas that we need to have, public mass transit. But, the way that these public employees are compensated, to say that it's generous is something of an understatement.
Well, yes, the mass transit system of Philadelphia is one of the least efficient in the entire country. That's why it requires subsidies of half of its budget coming from the state taxpayers. I mean, the Turnpike Commission, the reason you're paying higher tolls is, well, they're sending about $450 million every year to transit systems, the vast majority of it going to SEPTA, the transit system in Philadelphia. Here they are striking against the commuters for what's going to require even more subsidies from state taxpayers. This is the way that the unions are operating and the taxpayers are paying for it.
And to give the listeners some kind of perspective on this, that the employees of the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Agency, that they have what is called a Cadillac plan, that they have a health care plan, with very rich with benefits and, lower no copays and these kinds of things. The annual payment that the average SEPTA employee makes annual. For health care is a little over $500.
And so
for most people who are trying to cope and provide, health coverage for themselves and for their own families, well, that's like many hundreds of dollars every month.
Well, David, that's really the other side of the coin of the pension problem that governmental units are facing that are passing on to the taxpayers, and that is the health care costs. While we've heard all about the dramatic increases in Obamacare premiums, that everybody is getting whacked with much higher costs and lower quality health care insurance plans. Many of those in the public sector are shielded from them. Look, even in our own state legislature, they pay 1% towards their health care premium. So that is the equivalent. If we're paying $85,000 to a legislator in Harrisburg, they're paying $850 a year. Now, I know some families that, you know, they're paying double that and or triple that a month. So this goes back to that bubble that we're talking about, that the reality of the rest of the Commonwealth is unable to penetrate things. The government unions are able to leverage that and stymie these types of reforms, David, that, again, it's a math problem. It's not an ideological or partisan problem, although the partisan politics are coming to play here. But until we recognize, at least those folks on the inside, that they have the sweetest deal and that the taxpayers are the ones having to foot the bill for it.
Well, and ultimately, you know, while the union bosses have the attitude of, well, let's just bleed the taxpayer, people don't have to take it. They can leave. And this is one more way that, you know, that we're really hurting our Commonwealth and our future.
And if they have mobile capital, David, they are leaving, right?
Yes.
They're going
yes.
to Texas, to North Carolina, to Florida.
To Indiana.
That's absolutely right.
Yes.
We know where the jobs are going, and eventually we'll only have those that are captive here in Pennsylvania. And that's not going to be enough to pay all these bills.
Well, it's again, Matt, I know that you share these concerns and this frustration from, you know, being so close to the process and seeing how even, you know, incremental progress it can't be achieved. I mean, what is this going to mean for the upcoming general fund budget?
Well, we're looking at massive budget deficits primarily because of a budget that was built with, inadequate funds this last go around. This is only compounded by the payments required to pensions, to health care. This is going to be a big, big math problem, David, and there's just going to have to be the political will and courage to start tackling these things. That is where I am hopeful. I think that we're going to see new faces coming into the General Assembly and folks that are going to say, we can't bury those faces in the sand any longer.
Yep.
Because the crisis is right here at our doorstep, if not coming into our house.
Yes. Well, the time is upon us, and that's the kind of leadership we need. So here's hoping that we actually get it. Matt, thank you so much for being on the program here. Where can people go to learn more about you and Commonwealth Partners and the things that you're doing?
Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. And as ever, folks can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective on the Pennsylvania Cable Network. For Matt and myself, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Tax policy received scant attention in the presidential debates. But when it did, both candidates displayed a serious lack of understanding regarding at least one critical component of the tax code, carried interest. Although arcane in nature and unheard of by most, carried interest is a tax rule that fosters capital formation, encourages investment, and ultimately leads to job creation. Simply put, carried interest is a type of capital gain. Homeowners are familiar with the term capital gain, which in that circumstance refers to the increase in value of your home over time as you make improvements or rising market prices increase its sales value. If you sell your principal residence and you make more than $500,000 in profit as a married couple, you must pay a capital gains tax. You pay the capital gains tax rate, not the ordinary income tax rate on the transaction, because you've already paid taxes on the income you used to purchase the house. Likewise, carried interest is a long-term capital gain that is earned by an investment partnership. In this case, the asset is not a house, but an investment portfolio that the partnership established and grew over time. When sold, the portfolio manager pays a lower capital gains tax rate on the fund's profit, not the higher ordinary income tax rate. The presidential candidates have unfortunately decided to portray carried interest capital gains as a loophole granted to special interests. Both candidates want to raise this capital gains rate, claiming it gives investment fund managers an unfair tax break. Fairness, however, is not what such an increase would achieve. Rather, it would amount to double taxation. The negative effects would be much worse than overtaxing a subset of taxpayers. The partnerships that are formed when an investor joins with a fund manager results in a structure that fosters informed investments that grow over time. This growth generates profits. When the profits are reinvested, that is called capital. Such capital is invested in businesses so that they can grow, expand, and create jobs. Carried interest capital gain rules play a critical role in allowing capital to form. If you raise the carried interest capital gain tax rate, the government will take more in taxes, dramatically decreasing the amount of capital available for investment in the economy. A significant portion of that capital available for investment is invested right here in Pennsylvania. According to the American Investment Council, private equity firms invested an estimated $24.5 billion in Pennsylvania-based companies in 2015. There are 143 private equity firms headquartered in Pennsylvania. These companies support more than 185,000 workers at facilities both in Pennsylvania and in other states. In other words, carried interest capital gains is not a tax device aimed at making Wall Street fund managers richer. Rather, it is appropriate taxation that makes more capital available for investment in the companies that are creating much-needed new jobs for Pennsylvanians and elsewhere. It is common in an election year for candidates to propose new government spending programs in an effort to win votes. They then go looking for ways to pay for that higher spending. So-called reforms to the nation's complex tax structure is often an effective target. But changes can have unintended consequences. Raising the current 23.8% carried interest rate to 33% as proposed by Donald Trump, or almost 50% as suggested by Hillary Clinton, would result in only a modest increase in tax revenue flowing into the federal treasury. And we all know that any move to raise this rate would likely be coupled with other tax hikes on working families and small businesses. Even if you set aside the unfairness of double taxing investors, raising the carried interest tax rate or eliminating that category of capital gain entirely would have the detrimental effect of reducing capital formation. That means dramatically fewer dollars available for companies to grow and create new jobs. Carried interest is not a tax break for the wealthy. Rather, it is a way for investors to put their earnings to work, creating the new jobs needed as the nation struggles to recover from the Great Recession. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete programming is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 21 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including KQV News Radio in Pittsburgh, WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, along with WKQL AM and FM in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of them have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.